It's the unknown. Unknown. It's the unknown. Unknown creature.
Beautiful people, welcome, welcome to the Unknown Preacher LA. It is your boy Lonzo, aka LA. Man, we are so excited to have you. Normally I do dialogue with my co-host, but our guest, this is so important time and so crucial for her. So we're going to get to it. But before we do, I want to talk about some events. August 1st, again, Art of Exhortation. It's our third annual event, Fuquay Barrino 501 Wake Chapel Drive. And I will be there partnering with RC3 Church, man. And we have a plethora of artists. You don't want to miss it. It's Holy Hip Hop Night. And then August 14th, the Battle of Christian Hip Hop Stellar Awards Week at Headliners. 225 East 6th Street, Charlotte, North Carolina, 12 to 4 p.m., Rapper Soup, Ms. Tiffany, and yours truly, the Unknown Preacher LA. Hey, we are celebrating the stellar nominees. They will be present, so you don't want to miss that. And so thank you, thank you. Now, I tell you, man, I'm super excited to talk about our guest, Kimberly Simon. She is a cybersecurity executive, author, keynote speaker, media contributor, and business leader known primarily for her work in cybersecurity compliance, risk management, AI strategy, and digital resilience. She's built a strong reputation as a public-facing cybersecurity educator who translates technical security concepts into practical business language. Man, she's done it all. Her work spans are global, man, globally, North America, Europe, Middle East, Africa. And she's like advised Fortune 500 companies, government organizations, and she's just done it all. So welcome to the Unknown Preacher LA. Kimberly, how are you?
I am good. Thank you so much. What an introduction. Whoever that was sounds great.
I love doing it. Here we love spotlighting great works and giving people their roses, you know. And also, I love the facial expressions because sometimes we have to pause and it's like, wow, I've done all that. We forget about it. So, right. Yeah. And I'll tell you, I saw you on one of the ABC affiliate stations and they were asking you, they were getting expert advice. And I was like, I got to have her on the show. And shame on me because we put people in boxes. I'm always saying I don't want to do that. But I saw you and they said cybersecurity expert. And in my mind, I'm like, she doesn't fit the mold of a, you know, you don't. The typical what people imagine, and I said it's refreshing. I need to reach out Thank to you. Her. So it's a pleasure to have you. And now you're originally from Zimbabwe.
I am. So I was born in Zimbabwe, yeah. But then lost both my parents. Grew up in London. So I ended up studying, going to school in London. I moved to London when I was 13.
Wow.
Went to school there and then life finished school, decided, you know what? I'm not attached to any place. So I want to go live in Dubai. So I did. I went and lived in Dubai for 2 years. And then I lived in DC and then I moved to Toronto and now I'm in North Carolina.
North Carolina. Wow. That's impressive, man. And so I remember reading that, you know, you stated in the past that your journey began far away from the tech world. But when you look back at young Kimberly, what would surprise her most about the woman you became?
Great question. I think it's how calm I became. Yeah. And you know, when you're young, everything is so black and white. Yeah. I think as I've gotten older, I now understand that not everything is so black and white. There's a lot of gray areas in life. And that has taught me to give people grace. Yeah.
That is so, man, I'm telling you. And to your point, you do, when you're young, you think you have all the answers. And as you get older, you're right. There are a lot of gray areas. So spot on. And cybersecurity, I think every time you hear about it, I'll tell you me, there's an element of fear.
Yeah.
And but you speak about empowerment. Why was that important to you?
You know what? It's because I don't think that fear is a sustainable motivator. I just don't. It might get you to start, but it won't sustain the actions. So I wanted to really change the narrative around cybersecurity and help people see that there's an opportunity there. So I decided that I wanted to help two sets of people, small businesses. So I have I have two big goals. The first goal is to help 100,000 small businesses become cyber resilient. And then I wanted to help professionals. So with AI and tech, a lot of people are worried about their jobs. They've been displaced. So I wanted to help 100,000 professionals access non-technical cybersecurity roles. So I also train people to get into cybersecurity jobs.
I love it. And it goes back to what I said when I saw you on the station giving advice. Like, it's refreshing because people who, and I consider myself an outlier when it comes to law enforcement, it's refreshing because you come with different perspectives and you bring so much to the table. Because what I'm hearing from you, you're saying it's not about computers, it's about people, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And what moment did you realize that, or did you go into it already thinking like, this is what I'm going to do? Before I was a police chief, I used to imagine, like, if I'm ever running an agency, this is what I would do. So what's your story?
Oh, I never thought I would do this. I think when I realized it's not just about computers is when they hired me. I was like, oh. So I actually studied marketing in university. Wow. So my bachelor's degree is in marketing. Uh-huh. So I got into cybersecurity over 15 years ago when AI couldn't write things for you. So I started working for a cybersecurity company doing their marketing. So because I had to write about it and I had to produce all this marketing material, I decided, why don't I just learn it? And then I started to learn cybersecurity and really understand it. And I had a lot of support from the company I was working with. Just they invested in training me. And I loved it. I enjoyed it. And then after a while, I was like, okay, this is what I want to do. Just doubled down into compliance. Ended up writing two books on compliance. How about that?
Yes.
Would have never thought that at all. So this was not the plan. And I think even a moment that reinforced it for me, where I thought, okay, it's not just about computers, is when I heard about the very first cybersecurity incident happening to somebody that I knew. Mm-hmm. So I knew a guy who owns a company, and he was attacked. So had a data breach, lost a lot of money, lost a lot of clients. He couldn't, it was a ransomware situation where they locked him out of his entire network. He couldn't access any of his client files, couldn't get into his computer. So he lost a lot of money and clients. And that's when I realized that it's not just about computers. There's always a human sitting at the end of that. So there's people, there's companies, there's families that are at the back of that, that are impacted by everything that's happening with cybersecurity.
Great answer. And I think that would really push that drive to be great at what you do. But also there's probably stress and risk attached to that, because I would imagine you're guarded thinking about the constant threats, you know. I know I would.
Yeah.
So how do you own peace through all of that?
So great question. I would say my peace really comes from staying rooted in my relationship with God, honestly. Yeah. So through prayer and reading the word, that's how I start my day every day. Prayer and reading the word. And as an entrepreneur, I've learned to focus on the next faithful step that I can take. So instead of trying to control every outcome, I think about, you know, how can I protect my mind? And all you can do is really take the next faithful step that you know. And I recently became a mother. My son is just over 2 months old. So that has taught me a few things. I now see rest as a luxury.
Yes, indeed. I can relate.
But it's so important because it's actually part of being a good steward of life. See how we try and be a good steward in every other part of our life? Yes. Rest is being a good steward of life and the calling that God has given you. So peace doesn't come from having a perfect life. It comes from trusting God even when life isn't perfect.
Well said, well said. And is this your first child?
Yes.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so I jump at every cry.
Yes. It's so funny because the second one, you're like, yeah, they'll be okay.
Yeah, they'll be okay. People keep telling me that. Yeah, but I'm like, no, it's not supposed to cry.
What's going on? Yeah, it's a great journey. But I will tell you, it's going to go by really quick.
Listen, as long as at some point I can get some sleep, a full night's sleep, that would be great.
That's what's up. I love it. I love it. Now, I was having this conversation with a friend earlier, and I was actually, it was Bernie Mac. I was looking at I was talking about a documentary, and his wife was saying how this was the step to his greatness, right? He bombed. He had this big break, comedy break, and he absolutely bombed. And he was really down about it, but eventually that became his drive. And he studied all the best comedians. He worked extra hard, and hey, he became a king of comedy. But so my question to you is, what personal adversity shaped the way you lead today?
That's a great question. Honestly, for me, it was losing a job. Mm. So losing a job forced me to rebuild. It forced me to step back and say, okay, am I going back into corporate or am I going to try and do this on my own? And it was all of that, like navigating uncertainty. It taught me that leadership is not about having all the answers, because I promise you, when you lose a job, you don't have any answers, because you don't see it coming most of the time. You think, you know, yeah. So, it's not having all the answers and the courage to keep moving forward with integrity and faith. So because of that, I think, you know, I now have more grit. I can't afford to fail, kind of thing. When plan B is taken away, plan A has to work.
Yes.
That was the case for me. So today I would say I lead with more empathy because of that. And I think that's why I'm so passionate about helping people access resilient jobs in cybersecurity. So cybersecurity is a growing field where a lot of other industries are letting people go. In cybersecurity, we have a shortage of people. Knowledgeable, because the more we use technology, the more we use AI, the more we need people who understand how to protect information. So it allowed me to just create this whole business, this whole person that I've become.
That makes perfect sense. I likes. And I was thinking, I've said this before on the show, this book I read by Laura Day, and it was called Intuition. And she talked about, to your point about losing your job, and she talks about how those really huge setbacks like force us to pull something out of us that we never had before, and how having a job and having things that are consistent can really be a shackle to your growth. And so,
absolutely. Yeah. And I never realized it, because you don't worry about it until everything changes overnight.
Yeah.
And you have to figure it out. It's that whole sink or swim thing. I say I can't swim, but if you threw me in the water and it was either that or die, I can't swim.
That's exactly what it's self-preservation, survival of the fit, it's all of that. And you said you worked in corporate America. Like, when you said that, I immediately thought about the bottom line and money being the driver for everything. And I may be, again, you know, just being stereotyping, but do you think leaders, because you talked about the people behind this, do you think leaders struggle emotionally to connect?
Black Farmers Hub is located at 1409 Cross Street in Raleigh. Stop by Nature's 360 Cafe for your herbs, favorite acai bowls, smoothies, and juices. And join us for Mental Health, Wealth, and Wellness Mondays.
Come get your $25 back.
To connect to prevention, you
mean? Yes.
Because cybersecurity is all about, where I'm coming from anyway, preventing an incident. I would say absolutely. I think they do struggle to connect to prevention because it's solving a problem that you can't see yet. Mm-hmm. So Kimberly comes in and asks you to solve a problem that you can't see yet. So leaders are naturally focused on today's challenges, today's priorities. So it's so difficult for them to think cybersecurity because it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah.
the risk is invisible.
Yes.
But I guess the shift that I try to make is it's prevention is always less expensive than recovery.
Mm.
So in anything, really, prevention is always less expensive than recovery. So it's educating them that, hey, cybersecurity actually protects the business, protects the customers, protects your brand. So even though you can't see the risk, it's invisible. But, you know, prevention really is the way to go.
Amen to that. I remember, I'm just thinking about different organizations I was a part of, and it varied. We would have the IT guys who were really on edge, really guarded, and everything was protection. And I just remember some of us were like, they're overdoing it. And then I know some other organizations where the leaders were actually pushing those guys, hey, we need to make certain we're safe. But I think as we move forward, they're more conscious now, I think leaders are, right?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. People are worried about their information out there, more and more so.
Yeah. Man, this is great. What separates organizations that recover from crisis from organizations that collapse under pressure?
It's like with anything else. The people that recover are the ones that were prepared for the crisis in the first place.
Yeah.
So if you think of a company that has clear communication, they have strong leadership, they make decisions quickly under pressure, they're always going to recover quick. And then it's the companies that I've seen struggle whenever there's a cybersecurity incident are the ones that have always said, oh, well, we're too small, it won't happen to us. Oh, who would want to steal my information? Those are the people that I think struggle to recover.
Yeah.
Because cybersecurity, just like in life, resilience is usually built long-term, long before you even need it. So, you know, preventing things long before they even happen.
I like that too. Leadership, and I think both of us share a passion for that.
Mm-hmm.
I think we both will agree that emotional intelligence is really the cornerstone, right, of good leadership. Do you believe that cybersecurity is becoming more about that now, or is it still, or was it more about the technical intelligence?
I absolutely believe that cybersecurity is becoming more about emotional intelligence.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, the technical skills are important and they will always matter. But cybersecurity is ultimately about people. And as leaders, we're often helping teams navigate uncertainty. We're communicating with people during incidents. We're making difficult decisions under pressure. So leaders who are most effective today are the ones who can build trust, and technology can't do that for you. People who can remain calm in a crisis, people who can you know, drive change in an organization. So yeah, emotional intelligence can escape it.
I totally, totally agree. And I'm going to shift a little because this is something that I would love to pick your brain on because I have my own theories.
Oh, I want to hear yours too. Okay.
Just, but cyber crime, I want to talk about that. What do you think drives people to get into the, committing cyber crimes?
I would say the motivations are the same ones we've seen throughout history, like money, power, curiosity, revenge. I've seen disgruntled employees do some weird things.
Yeah.
And technology simply gives individuals the ability to act those emotions in a, on a much larger scale and often, you know, with a sense of distance and anonymity.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think drives people? Because now I got to hear your theory.
So I do agree with you, but I also think, so we talk about opportunities when you, when you're committing crime. So there's an opportunity there. And I think it tends to be a little more challenging for law enforcement to apprehend these people. So yeah, because you're less likely to get caught than other crimes, it's like, hey, this is a little more attractive. I can do this and my chances of getting away with are a little higher, right? And then especially when you talk about another country, you're talking about crimes committed outside of the U.S. and that makes it even more challenging. You're talking about jurisdiction and all of that. So that's kind of my theory.
Oh, yeah. And it's true. The fact that you're distant from it, it definitely makes a difference. You could, you know, commit a crime impacting somebody who's in a completely different continent. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And now I want to really talk about this because I joke about it all the time with my friends. I'm like, did you ever watch Terminator?
Yes. Who has?
I just gotta throw it out there, you know.
Okay.
Assume. But you know, you're always, we hear about AI and there's this big cloud of fear, I think, from a lot of people. Yet we use it all the time. It's like it's so convenient, but I think we're always like, they're gonna take over, and we're, you know, and so I wanna ask you, what scares you if you're scared? You may not be, but what scares you more, artificial intelligence becoming too powerful or humanity becoming too dependent?
I would say I am more scared of humanity becoming too dependent on AI. AI is a tool.
Yes.
A very powerful tool. So its impact depends on how we choose to use it. So my concern is this: we're going to stop questioning it. We're going to stop making decisions ourselves. Yeah. We're going to stop creating and being innovative and just rely on it, right? People are just outsourcing all their tasks to AI. Yeah. So it's going to impact critical thinking, accountability. So I'm more worried about people being too dependent on AI.
I totally agree.
How about you?
I totally agree with you. I have a friend and we're on the same page now, but I remember he was pulling information from AI and I was like, that's wrong. And then when he started asking it, it was like, wow, it is. And not only that, like you can see when people, I think a lot of people can tell now when it's, ChatGPT or AI, and it's just that human factor, man.
It's, I don't care.
Yeah.
I got to tell you this because it come up. So there's a friend of mine who was like, I can prove to you that AI is not better than humans.
Yes.
So he put in ChatGPT, I want to go and wash my car. The car wash is a block from my house. How shall I go there? And then the AI responded, since it's only a block from your house, you're better off walking because they might not be parking when you get there and all of this stuff. And like, well, I'm not going to go wash my car and leave the car. So it didn't even reason like a human being. Seriously, it's so many things that you know it's never going to replace you. If you're using AI, especially I think ChatGPT, guilty of this, where it doesn't have the concept of date. So if you ask it something today and then ask it something related to that, you know, 2-3 months from now, it hasn't moved in time.
Yeah.
So it doesn't know that you're now 3 months later and you're now in March as opposed to, you know, when you first asked in December.
Yes, yes.
Things like that. So, yeah.
I love that story too, and that man, if that's not a drop the mic moment, it just, and I remember I was in a group in this leadership program, and we had a team project, and one person they said, hey, I'm gonna use ChatGPT to do our paper, and that was my really first time with any exposure to it, but they did the paper and we read it, and when I tell you it was so many things, I was like, hey, this, again, you can't replace the human factor on there. We are emotional people, and pulling those heartstrings and telling that story, you know, I don't think they'll ever, I don't think it can ever replace that.
Oh, no, not at all. And that's the worry that, you know, people are using it so much that they've stopped questioning it. They just put in information, they copy and paste it, and then they send. And it's like, you still got to question this thing and double check.
Yes. As you said so eloquently, it's a tool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is a tool, and we should treat it as such. You know? But I do fear, and I want to get your take on this too, because we are so technically advanced, and is it Moore's law that they say doubles every 6 months or something like that? Is that what, correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm not.
We got to ask AI.
Yeah, that's a good one. I think they call it Moore's law. I don't know, but technology doubles like every 6 months. But there was a book I remember, and they talked about Big Brother watching you. And it just seemed like now we're moving closer and closer. Before, we were even close to this. I mean, I was a kid hearing about this book, Big Brother. I don't know what book it was, but I just remember everyone saying Big Brother's watching you. And I think we're really close to that now.
Oh, my goodness. Have you tried saying something and then you start seeing ads about it?
Yes. Just yesterday, what was I talking about? And then when I pulled up IG, it was an ad about the very thing I was just talking to someone about.
Isn't that crazy?
Crazy. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's scary. I mean, we're being watched, listened to, all of that. So what about the psychological toll of living in a world where you you feel like you're being watched, tracked, and to our points, vulnerable online?
I think one of the biggest psychological tolls about being watched, as I think about it, is people, you know, can no longer be themselves. So they alter their behavior if they believe that they're being watched. People become more cautious on what they say, what they share, well, they should be, and then on who they are. So people kind of shape who they are, and it's not always, you know, authentic.
Yeah.
So over time, I feel like we're going to have this society of people with just increased anxiety and reduced authenticity.
Yeah.
And we're just not going to be able to trust each other because everybody's faking who they are online, not just in institutions, but to one another. We're just, you know, just creating these profiles of people that we're not because everybody's watching. So, privacy is not just about protecting data. It's about preserving that freedom of being able to be who you are without constant scrutiny.
I like that. I didn't think of it like that. And I will tell you, from when you put on your police hat and you look at like controlling crime and maintaining order, you see the advantages of seeing everything. But then again, that liberty is so crucial. And especially in this country, we're always talking about freedom here. And so it's a balancing act. I don't know, you know, you said you watched Terminator, but I guarantee you haven't seen this movie. It's called Demolition Man. And
I have, actually, a long time ago. I don't remember it. Yes.
Yeah. So Demolition Man, Sylvester Stallone, so he goes in the future, and they basically are being watched. If you said a profanity, I think he said a curse word, and then it's like whatever robot or AI software is like, you're being fined for saying this, and he said it again. They said, okay, the third one, the police are on their way. And I mean, no matter where you went, you were being watched and listened, and people were listening, or the machines were listening to you. But yeah, that's what I'm thinking about when we say being tracked.
Yeah.
Hey, where do you think AI could improve humanity?
Oh, the opportunities are endless, from accelerating medical breakthroughs, making education more accessible, helping people in my industry, helping people detect cybersecurity threats and solve global challenges. So honestly, the opportunities for AI to improve our lives is a lot. So I would say, used responsibly, AI can give people more time to focus on creativity, on relationships, and work that humans can actually do. So yeah, I think AI has a lot of impact to have in our lives.
So you said relationships. Tell me a little more about that. And I know I have listeners who are curious too when you said that.
And this is a problem where, you know, with everything being so easily done online, people are losing that human connection.
Yeah.
And I think it's a failure on our part to see the better ways to use technology. So technology should actually free up your time so that you're able to invest more in relationships.
Yeah.
Technology and AI should free up your time so that you're able to take time and be more creative. Instead of outsourcing creativity and relationship building to technology and saying, okay, we're just going to do everything online. You're not even going to make the effort. I think they still work that only humans can do. And relationship building is definitely one of them. I want to have lunch with you. I don't want to just, you know, sit and stare at the computer all the time. Yeah. Before I give you my money, I would really like to see who you are, if it's business. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I feel like people are losing that, because before you know it, you've spent the past month just at home staring at a screen, and you haven't actually bothered to schedule a lunch to go meet up with some friends or to go actually meet clients or potential clients. You have to invest in those relationships. And sometimes it's person to person, not just online.
Great answer. I really like that. Wow. So we're winding down, but I do want to get maybe one or two questions off, because I want to get your perspective on this. And if it really exists, are there unique pressures as a woman in cybersecurity leadership?
Being a woman in cybersecurity has been one of the hardest things that I've ever done. So I started in cybersecurity, I want to say 16, 17 years ago. I promise you, I would be at a cybersecurity event and I would not only be one of the only Black people there, but I would be the only Black woman in a room.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, there was only maybe two or three other women and they were Caucasian. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So that was hard. Even now, I don't look like what you expect, I guess, in the industry. We're growing. We're getting more women. We're getting more people of color into the industry. And I'm certainly playing my part in that. I train people to get into this field. And I get really passionate when I get to partner with organizations where it's, you know, women organizations, or it's for people of color. So, yeah, I feel like as a woman and as a Black woman in cybersecurity, I had to prove my credibility before I was given the same level of trust that a man just has.
Mm,
So that was hard.
Yeah. I'm really fascinated by your answer, and I'll tell you, for there are different layers there, because I'll say this. So often African Americans, myself included, will say we feel like you have to overperform at times to prove yourself. And I've said before, my mother used to tell me that as a child, you have to work twice as hard, be twice as good. And so it put this enormous amount of pressure on me. But you're not originally from the United States. And so I've heard people retort that and say that's just African Americans who feel like that. But if you talk to someone who's Black from another country, they don't feel the same. And so I find it fascinating, and it really supports a whole lot of things. So, yeah, thank you for sharing it.
No, yeah, it's, you know, we're getting better at it. So yeah. I hope that I'm not discouraging anyone from getting into the cybersecurity field. It's a growing field, but, you know, there's still challenges, especially for us women. We have to really take our place and be confident in it. We have to be confident taking up space.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we are winding down, and I always give the last words to my guests. I want you to take this opportunity to promote any events you will be in attendance, any books, any tours. I know you've mentioned having two literatures out. And so I just give you the floor. You can talk about whatever you want. File on. Floor is yours.
Thank you. I would say my passion right now is my goal to help 100,000 people access cybersecurity jobs by 2035. Wow. So that's fun. If you have been laid off, if you are looking for a job, if you are worried about the future of the industry that you're working in or the future of your job, cybersecurity is a good place to get into. It's a growing industry. I teach non-technical people how to access jobs that are not technical. So things like compliance, like risk, like operations, where you don't need to code and you don't need to be technical, but you can still work and contribute in the field of cybersecurity. So I run two cohorts only a year. I do one in April and one in September. So September cohort is, we just opened up applications for that. We're very selective of the people that we work with, because I've worked hard to build my name. So if I am going to have you in a cohort, it's because I believe that I can help you. So yeah, I think if you are interested in working in cybersecurity and you are not technical, reach out to me. My name is Kimberly Simon. You can email me at Kimberly@meetkimberlysimon.com.
Wow. Kimberly, thank you so much. We got to have you back. I want to set some bases on you while with you and share some thoughts, but as always, you're always welcome on the Unknown Preacher LA. God bless you, and please keep doing what you're doing.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, and I am looking forward to coming back and discussing a different topic.
Amen. All right. Take care.
Thank you.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is.
Don't you agree?
Yes, I do.
Than a cliche. He's on time, there's never a delay. Way back when I was all about appearance, now deliver rhymes about my deliverance. Say he's on time, but not on our time, so you can't treat God like a genie in a lamp. If you waste time to mess with my kind and try to change your mind, then we about to break camp. I stay at home, the Bible with the grip. Hallelujah on my lips, cause we here to worship. Do good deeds and pray on my knees. When it comes to the Bible, you know your boy reads.
Miss power and glory. He's my king. Rain down fire when I step in sin. Covered in the blood, I don't fear no fights. Shine real bright, cause I live in his light. Favor too big, can't mute this grace. Devil trying hard, but he out of his place. Prayers too strong, I don't fold, I rise. Might bend a little, but I never deny. Know I've been chosen, all on me. This little light for the world to see. Walking in purpose, I'm spirit led. Devil stay pressed and I'm still ahead.
Don't forget to follow the Unknown Preacher LA podcast. We're on all podcast platforms.
It's the unknown. Unknown. It's the unknown. Unknown Preacher.